Hello and welcome to this week's episode of You Seem Interesting. I am your host, Danny Ruge. As always, thank you so much for checking out the show. However you are checking it out, we welcome your ears. It is an honor to be beamed to your cell phone while we lay in wait for you to hit play. And if you're supporting us on Patreon, patreon.com/funnydanny, you're the best and you know it. Shake the tail when you walk. We always appreciate it. Thank you guys so much for that. We're now on Amazon Podcast. We got Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, all of that stuff. Wherever you want to find us, you can find us. And please review, subscribe, all those good things to help spread the word. This week's episode's about weddings, the wedding industry. I was a rube. I still am in many ways, but I was a complete rube about this. And it was indirectly the wedding industry that actually led me to meet my wife. And I'm recording this in the week that I'm going to be celebrating my 10-year wedding anniversary myself. So I thought, how fitting to have this episode be about weddings. And my guest is the founder and the big boss at Bellwether Events, Janice Carnevale. She is a wedding planner extraordinaire here in the Washington, D.C. metro area where I live. And she's got some great stories and really cool experience. So we'll have my chat with her in a few minutes. But before we get into the nitty and the gritty, it's time for the strangest gimmick in all of podcasting.
It is once again time for the strangest gimmick in all of podcasting. A moderately passable celebrity impression asking you for money.
Mr. Anderson, it seems you have been living two lives. By day, you go to work and you listen to podcasts. At night, you are going to patreon.com/funnydanny. One of these has a future, the other does not.
Well, I have something for you. How about I give you the finger and you give me my phone call? You can't stare me with this Gestapo crap.
Tell me, Mr. Anderson, what good is a phone call if you are unable to speak?
There was really no reason for me to be doing that, I'll be honest with you. But I just had it in my mind. I was thinking about the Matrix today. Whatever. Deal with that. I told you it's a strange gimmick. Let's get into weddings, people. You know them. You love them. We do this a lot in America, okay? About $55 billion per year spent on weddings in the United States. I found this number very interesting, by the way. So it's just under 2.5 million weddings per year. And that number has basically remained flat since 1990. So there are some years where it's, you know, 2.2, 2.3, but it's always in that very same range. Basically, for 30 straight years, we've had just about 2.5 million or slightly less weddings in the United States of America. I actually found that really surprising. We've had a population explosion. The sons and daughters of the baby boomer generation came of age, just like me, to get married. And honestly, I thought this would be more of a factor. Think about more people now can get married than could before, right? With restrictions removed for gay weddings and everything in between, right? I thought that we would have an increase in weddings, but it's remained just about flat, which I thought was very, very interesting. The average wedding in the U.S. cost about $34,000. In a major city, that cost jumps up to around $40,000. And really, that's just kind of your bare bones, your facility, your party, your DJ and the flowers and all those types of things, around $4,000. Your event planner, and we'll talk to Janice Carnevale here in a moment, who is your wedding planner. Your wedding planner can be anywhere from $1,000 to $4,000. Again, just kind of depending. That's the average cost for what you want them to do. We had something at my wedding, for example, called a day of wedding planner. So it just meant that we didn't have to hand cash to the DJ, to the catering staff, and somebody else. She handled that kind of stuff and made sure that the boutonnieres were on and we knew where the rings were. So she just kind of managed the logistics and nobody had to worry about anything. There are folks who do the entire gamut, right? The entirety of the operation, where that job can range from sort of a small role of helping just kind of facilitate that day to helping brides, grooms, families come up with every single detail, from venue to florist to photographer to caterers to bakers, invitation designs, all of that stuff. And it is a huge, huge task. And wedding planners, good ones like my guest Janice, basically, what do you want? You let me know what level of involvement you want from me. And some brides and grooms need to be steered. Some need to be reined in. Some need to be encouraged. Reading that is probably one of the greater challenges, I would say, that a wedding planner kind of has to figure out and sort of do on the fly. But that wedding planner job is essential. You find a good one that you trust. Word of mouth, kind of pre-internet, was the way that so many folks would end up. I mean, think about the person that does this in a small to medium-sized town. You have a good experience with somebody before there's Yelp, before there's reviews. You get that word of mouth spread, and you become kind of the town wedding planner. You get known for that. But back to the initial thing that I mentioned here at the outset. As a dude in his 20s in the mid-2000s, I was an idiot. I'm probably slightly less of an idiot now, but still an idiot, if you please. But I really didn't know anything, okay? So the long and short is my now wife was leaving her corporate job, right? She had this very high-pressured, hard-working, you know, 70, 80 hours a week type thing, and it kind of ground her out. It burned her out a little bit, right? So she always loved floral design, always loved flowers, and kind of decided that she wanted to try this. So she went into wedding floral design. Okay. She needed to move out of her really fancy, nice apartment and really cool place and downsize and get cheaper. Well, guess whose Craigslist ad she responded to? That's right, mine. So that's how we ended up meeting. She came and saw my bad apartment, and it was a two bedroom, and we realized we couldn't do this, but we ended up staying in touch, went out on dates, and are married with a couple of kids. That's kind of how your story goes. Short version, we met on Craigslist, but we always like to provide extra details because that doesn't sound quite as nice. But anyway, that's kind of how I got introduced into this world. So she was a floral designer for a small company in the Washington, D.C. area, and her weeks were different than mine, right? So Mondays and Tuesdays were kind of her off days, and she would ramp up for weekends where she would work these ungodly hours, setting up, taking down, and everything in between. So if I wanted to hang out with her, and I obviously did, I'd have to go and kind of help do some of the breakdown late at night. And I would see some of the incredible amount of work that goes into this thing to make everybody's perfect day kind of come off without a hitch. So getting into the wedding planner specific part of this, and just kind of as we talk about weddings, there's that, you know, that stereotype, and there are these, you know, television shows, whether they're on Bravo or networks like that, where you get these tyrants, these, you know, crazy bridezillas or overbearing mothers-in-law, or you know, a groom that hates everything, or a dad that won't pay for certain things, or, you know, an overly conservative person that doesn't like a dress a certain way. All these challenges are real in some way, right? And yeah, sometimes it's over the top, and sometimes it's a little bit of a caricature presented for television, but that's a real challenge for wedding planners like my guest Janice. And navigating that, and if you guys are married, listening to this, you probably remember how you were stunned maybe at some of these details and all these decisions, and everyone's looking at you for what you want. Do you want a table runner? I didn't know what a table runner was. I found out that I did want a table runner. In fact, I found out what kind of flowers I didn't want when I suggested something and I got a dirty look, and I said, yes, dear, every time my wife opened her mouth when it came to something that she knew a lot about and I knew nothing about. That would be a nice little bit of foreshadowing, by the way, into the marriage. But I could talk about this ad nauseum, and I don't know anywhere near as much as my guest, the big boss at Bellwether Events, Miss Janice Carnevale. Enjoy. Pumped about my guest this week on You Seem Interesting, wedding planner, huge Nationals fan here in Washington, D.C., Janice Carnevale joins me. Janice, thank you so much for hanging out for a few minutes. I appreciate it.
I'm so excited. Thank you for having me, Danny.
It is awesome. So bellwetherevents.com is your website. You are a wedding planner. So we'll get into some of the logistics and some of the highs and lows and challenges. But I think the coolest thing about this that probably gets underrated and lost, you own your own business. You're in charge of your own business. I think something like that is really cool. And we kind of underrate that as to the bravery and the logistics and the challenges to be responsible for everything under the sun, from taxes to employees to whatever comes with it. It's pretty amazing. And it's a compliment to you.
Well, that's really nice of you to say. And to be honest, I didn't do this because I wanted to run my own business. I just wanted to plan weddings. And at the time, there weren't really a lot of, you know, larger companies with larger teams of wedding planners. And so really your only option was to work for yourself. And after a few years of working for, let's just say, unstable people, I thought, well, maybe working for myself will be better. But the running the business side of things is certainly not my favorite part. It is definitely what I do last on my to-do list.
How is this entire situation that we're in now? This is still recorded during the time of pandemic. The cases are still rising, steady stream, and arguments around what to do and how to do it, et cetera. How has that affected you and your business?
Well, as you might imagine, the quarantine, the pandemic, the virus has been absolutely devastating for my industry. From March until about June, all events in the DC metro area were canceled. My weddings, all of my friends' weddings, the weddings that my clients were also attending in addition to their own wedding that they were planning. You know, as a stand-up comedian, all your gigs were canceled. All the NAS games were canceled. I mean, live events and weddings weddings are considered a live event. This is the kind of the last industry, the first industry to be shut down, and it will likely be the last industry to come back full force. As a wedding planner, it's hard for me to pivot to doing, you know, takeout like a restaurant can. My business really depends on being able to gather, you know, dozens, if not hundreds of people into one room. So, you know, at first we weren't sure how long this was going to last. And I had about four weddings that were in the spring and summer, and they rescheduled for the fall. And then during the summer, all of my fall weddings and my new fall weddings that had already postponed once, all postponed until 2021. So, you know, that's a huge problem for my cash flow. It's a huge problem for my calendar next year, because now I moved seven weddings from 2020 to 2021. I only do about 16 weddings a year. So now I'm going to end up probably doing 20 or 25. Because I've already collected most of the revenue for those weddings, because they were, a lot of them were basically done.
Right.
So my cash flow is going to be down. I'm going to be working more hours and more weekends than normal. And I'm just, luckily I have the best clients in the world, and they've just been so understanding and so flexible. And, you know, I'm sure there's been tears, but there haven't been a lot of tears. But it really has been a grieving process. I did have one couple that just said, you know what, we're just going to cancel and go to the church and have our small ceremony with our 20 family members that live in the area. And that was, I'm happy for them. They're so happy to be married, and it was still a beautiful ceremony. But, you know, all the work that I had done for their reception, I was disappointed to see that not come to fruition. You know, clients that just have invested hours and hours of time bringing their dreams and their ideas to fruition. And now everything is just kind of on pause. And, you know, we're all hopeful that next year will go smoothly, but no one knows, obviously. You know, I don't have a crystal ball. No one has a crystal ball. And so we're all, it's a very weird sort of waiting pattern that we're all kind of sitting in, hoping that things get better next spring.
You mentioned your clients, Janice, and I think that's the most intriguing part about this. We know about, you know, the stereotypical sort of, you know, movie depiction of the bridezilla or the TV shows about the different things. But in reality, I'm sure it's much different, right? You're working with couples and parents, and there's always a lot of people to work with. But can you go into an experience or two or whatever where somebody comes in and is so unrealistic? They're like, I want a unicorn riding a dragon, and I want to pay $11 for it. Like, when it's just so over the top. And how do you massage that? Because you're client facing, and their happiness is your business, right? How do you sort of handle those sorts of things to channel realism, but still give them that dream that they wanted?
You know, Danny, it's funny. The only person who has ever asked me about like swans, a la Father of the Bride with Steve Martin, was someone who was a TV show producer who was trying to get me to basically like lie about my experiences as a wedding planner for this like TV pitch. For the most part, I feel very lucky. My clients are very down to earth. The biggest learning curve, especially in this area, is the cost. People just generally do not anticipate the high cost of things. And so that's why, you know, typically when I write a proposal before they've even hired me, they get a budget from me. I want to rip that Band-Aid off as soon as possible so that they realize like how far or not far their their budget will go. And some people, they have, like, you know, this is how much I've saved. This is how much I've parents saved. My budget is finite. Certainly that was my situation 14 years ago. But other people just pull a number out of the air and don't really know what that will get them. And so that is the biggest learning curve, is explaining to people what things cost, why they cost what they cost. You know, there's so much beautiful content out there on blogs and on Pinterest and on Instagram. But what those images don't tell you is, oh, well, that ceiling decor floral piece in that tent was $10,000. Mm. Most people do not have $10,000 for their tent ceiling floral decor piece. If they do, they should call me. But most people don't have that. And but in terms of personalities, you can really spot the quote-unquote bridezillas and groomzillas and momzillas really from a mile away. The red flags are there. You know, the way they phrase things in their introductory email, or the things that they say on a call or now a Zoom, or, you know, previously in a meeting. There's just like little, you know, I've been working on weddings really since 2002, but I've had my business since 2006. The ding, ding, dings in the back of your head, you're like, oh, that's I like to be in control of things. Yeah, that's a red flag for me. Like, I'm more of a laid back, chill bride's wedding planner. So you can kind of spot those personality conflicts earlier on. And so for me, it just becomes, you know what, I'm no longer available for your date, or you just double the price. And if they pay it, you're like, well, they paid it.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you about. So it sounds like you have you said no, because clients just, there's a threshold that you're just like, this isn't worth it unless you double the price, in which case, you know, bully for you. What, I guess, how often does that happen, and what sort of thresholds need to be met for you to say, you know what, you should probably call somebody else?
Yeah, it's definitely delicate, because, you know, I don't know that Grant and Danny has like a Yelp page or Google right. review page, but I certainly do. And so you have to be really delicate when you're kind of letting someone down. And, you know, over the years, it's probably only happened twice where I kind of was like, you know what, I'm no longer available for your date. I don't think we're a really good fit anyway. Here's someone else that I think might be a better fit for you, and referring them out to another planner. But it's hard. I mean, these are people's emotions and their dreams. And I really don't like using that word dreams, because it's so cheesy.
No, but it is. Honestly, people think about this for years. Sure.
Yeah. So it just, it is a very delicate balance, and you just have to be really gracious and just try to let them down easy by, you know, it's not you, it's me. But also, like, here's another option for you. So you're not, like, kind of just throwing them to the wolves to start over in their research process.
Well, you mentioned Yelp, and that leads me to my next question. In this online world, it can be great, right? The your ability to get your portfolio, your recommendations, your services in front of more eyeballs is easier than it's ever been before. Before, it was like some word of mouth at like a sewing club, where it's like, did you hear about Janice? She does wonderful weddings, and then you get business. Now you're there for the world to see. The downside is maybe the power that individual folks might have. If they didn't like the appetizer, Janice gets 0 stars, you know? That's one of the things that I would find so stressful. How do you deal with that? And then how do you deal with the stress of that?
Well, I have a great story about that. So if you're not familiar, there's a website called WeddingWire.com. And WeddingWire recently bought The Knot, which is also like a wedding publication conglomerate. They had Tangible magazines, those are going away. And they also had a very large online presence. So now the two companies combined are called Wedding Pro. Wedding Wire is really the go-to place for vendor reviews. And I'm telling you, 12 years ago, I'm talking to this brand new to me hairdresser who was so nice, and she was so great to work with on the wedding day. And she's like, you have to get on Wedding Wire. It's so great. You know, all the brides are there, all, you know, everyone, you got to go on there and set up your profile and be great. I'm like, okay, cool. I'm pretty new in business. I need to get my information out there. Let me go set this up on WeddingWire. So I set up my profile on WeddingWire, and I get this email immediately. Congratulations, you have one new review. And I'm like, well, that's amazing. I open it up. It's a 2 stars out of 5. And the person is talking about how they're going to pursue legal action against me. And that was quite a shock. And also did not look great being my only review and my first review. So after having a little panic cry, because, you know, it was emotional, and that's the way to release emotion is crying, I went to a mentor of mine. I'm like, what do I do? And he said, just go reach out to all of the other clients you had and ask them to leave you a positive review. And then that person will look like an outlier and everyone will see all these other positive reviews. And I did that, and everyone, all the other clients were happy. And even a couple of them were like, so this other person who left you this terrible review, like that seems, you know, whatever. And so it got turned around pretty quickly from there. And from there, I would have to say, like, since then, you know, I think my overall average out of like 78 reviews is a 4.9. I'm never going to get 5.0 because of that 2.0, but it is what it is. And so, you know, moving forward, I am diligent, you know, with having 78 reviews on there now over the past 12 years. I guess it's 14 years. I am somewhat, anyone can go on that website and write a review for me. WeddingWire does allow you to have 2 recourses as the vendor against a negative review. You can reply to the review, or if you can prove that that person actually didn't hire you, WeddingWire will take down the review. There's somewhat limited courses of action, but, you know, it's just, it's part of the world that we live in now, Danny. You know that all the stress that comes with being very online.
Yes.
And so I think for the most part, people are conscientious about their reviews. If something was really bad, they're gonna post a review most likely because they want to warn people away. If something was really good, they're gonna post a positive review because they want that person or that vendor or that company to succeed and thrive. I feel like if you kind of performed in the middle, the reviewer is just gonna not bother. Mm. It's not worth their energy to go through writing like a 3.5 out of 5 or something like that.
Well, the part, by the way, that I think is so funny out of that is the person didn't give you 1 star to threaten legal action. It was a 2-star review and then legal action. I can't imagine what a 1-star review would have been. Like, really, really funny to me. But you mentioned cost before, and then, you know, part of this industry, and I got a window into it. My now wife, when we first met, we met because she was leaving her corporate job where she worked a billion hours and was just miserable all the time. She left and went to work for a floral design company. And, and she had to downsize her life. And that's how we got lucky enough when she met a schlub like me and happily ever after. Right. Well, so I kind of just didn't know what I didn't know in this universe. And if we wanted to hang out on a weekend, I had to, you know, pick her up from one of these weddings where she was working 14-hour days and all this kind of crazy stuff. But the preferred vendor's experience, and that's what I wanted to get to here, for you as the wedding planner, you've got some of your go-tos and tiers and different parts of that. I'd love for you to go into how you sort of accrue them and how kind of, you know, you make sure that you can trust them and some of those relationships that you have to cultivate for when someone says, I want this, I want a caterer, and you have this person, or I want flowers, I go to this person, etc. How does that come about?
It is so word of mouth in this industry, and I feel very lucky because the DC market is incredibly congenial. We are all friends. We all get along. There are little cliques here and there, but it's not like Mean Girls. It is truly, you know, an industry where you can count on other people. And if I'm talking to, you know, a florist and they're not available for the weekend, you know, they might refer me to another florist, and that's one of my favorite florists that I work with now. That's how I came to her. I was talking to another florist and they were not available for the weekend. And she's like, you have to try Linville Studios. And so I went, and now Linville is like one of my go-tos for like the last, I would say, 6 or 7 years. not that I don't use other florists, because I certainly do, but she has a really great aesthetic and a great price point for my clients. Same thing with photographers. You know, I've just been doing this for so long that in the beginning, you kind of figure out, A, especially with photography, like, who do you get along with well? Because I'm talking to the photographer the most on the wedding day. Where are you? Are you on time? What have you done? What do you still need to do? Are you ready for this? You know, this other thing is coming up on the timeline. And then whether or not they are responsive in sharing the images afterwards. Because if I don't get images after a wedding, like, it's like it never happened. and it's like almost worthless to me. Other than being able to verbally tell someone about my experience at that venue or at that wedding, not having images is just really detrimental to my being able to show that in my portfolio to future clients. So photographers, you know, early on, I met a few that I liked a lot. And then again, if they're not available for the date, if the price point isn't quite right, I trust them. I trust them to make another recommendation. And then, as you might imagine, a lot of my friends, maybe most of my friends now as a grown-up, are wedding planners. And I have quit Facebook. I'm very proud of quitting Facebook.
Good for you.
But the one thing that I knew I was going to miss was the group of wedding planners, like, chats on Facebook. So I started a Slack channel, invited a bunch of people to join my Slack channel. If any wedding planner out there wants to be on the Slack channel, just email me and I'll add you right on. Cause I wanted to replace, I still want that space to vent and to ask questions and to brainstorm ideas. But I didn't want to do it on Facebook anymore. So it really is just being, you're relying on the network that you already have. Now, that said, over the summer, you know, obviously since the death of George Floyd, there has been a much more concerted effort to integrate, because the wedding industry in DC definitely self-segregates. And I don't even know if self-segregate is the right word, because it might be one group is segregating from the other. So in kind of the, a lot of people, myself included, are definitely making a more concerted effort to look outside of our quote unquote regular group and to explore the Black vendors that are out there and the other, you know, vendors of color and minority, whether that's LGBTQ or religion side of things, exploring folks that maybe weren't in our original circle, because we do self-segregate in life in general, as well as the industry. And so that's been a concerted effort of mine over the last few months, is to get to know new people, get to know their portfolios, recommend them to my clients, and that kind of thing.
What's a challenge that people wouldn't know about? I mean, a day of, I remember our wedding, I would look over and, you know, our wedding planner, when we got married in New York in 2010, it looked like she was Usain Bolt off the starting line, man, just running from one place to another, but always kind of behind the scenes. So I know you run around like crazy day of, but what's a challenge that people who are outside looking in might not know about?
I feel like there's been enough wedding planner movies that people kind of have a good sense of, you know, what can go wrong. I've had a cake not show up. I mean, it eventually showed up, but like, it was not there on time, like not even close to on time. And it's like, what are you doing to problem solve that? Yeah, there's certain things that you have to decide to keep from the couple. And there's certain things that you have to decide, okay, I need to loop the couple in and help have them weigh in on whatever decision has to be made to overcome whatever challenge has appeared. I think a lot of the biggest challenges for me is making sure that the bride and groom, or the couple, you know, whether it's two brides or two grooms, that their vision is what comes to life. I do have a lot of couples where the parents are either totally financing it or significantly financing the celebration, and that can cause some people to think that they should have more influence than maybe they should. And I really try to be an advocate for the couple and try to make sure that they're heard and they're not being, you know, run over by someone else, because that other someone else person is the one pulling the pocketbook. Pulling the purse strings. In terms of, I mean, I think you and I are almost the same age, And I do wonder how much longer I can physically do it. It's a long day on your feet. You know, women's shoes are not made appropriately. They're not comfortable. they're not comfortable. They don't have cushion. I mean, you know, I'm not going to wear Crocs. So, you know, I have to look at least somewhat expensive on the wedding day, as shitty as that sounds, because I'm serving a certain level of clientele. But the shoes are not appropriate. I go home, you know, at midnight or 1 a.m. and do legs up the wall until I, like, basically fall asleep. So it is a physical job for one day of the year.
The physical part of it, again, you're on your feet for so many hours and you got to be Johnny on the spot. All right, you are, and you're kind enough to be a listener of this show, so you knew this one was coming. Yeah. And you have prepared for this. I can't wait. Give me your touchdown, Spike. Give me the moment and in your face, whatever it is, and then give me a low moment. Give me one where you went, oh my God, I've made the wrong choice.
So I would say my touchdown, Spike, is that last September, I was sitting in the back room of the wedding venue. The wedding was going on and I was kind of, it was kind of a lull moment. And I think they were eating dinner and there's not a lot for me to do while they eat dinner. So I'm just kind of sitting there and I look over at my assistant and I said, this day has gone perfectly. And she's like, yep, it sure has. And it's just those moments where it's like the timeline worked out. All the vendors did what they were supposed to do. And everything is just going smoothly. I haven't had to solve any problems. I haven't had to put out any fires or get stern with anybody. That's something that sticks out. I think it's also because it was one of my last weddings that I had. And that's always, you know, not having anything new to think about or consider. I get a lot of repeat business from families. So when I get to do like multiple siblings, that's like a huge honor for me. And then my final touchdown, Spike, is I've been published in 22 magazines, and that really is really nice to have that kind of recognition from, you know, the editors of the industry. And so that's very exciting for me to think about and look back on. A low, this year sucks.
Yes.
this year sucked real hard. At one point I just can't work. Like, I just need to like zone out on Netflix and I can't do any work for a couple of days. But something that necessarily didn't I do, but back in 2012, and I was very much reminded of this because recently in the news over the summer, there was a storm in Iowa, you might remember, called the derecho.
Yes.
And we had a derecho. I'm pretty sure you were in the area at this time in 2012.
That's right, yeah.
And we had a derecho in 2012. And that just so happened, the derecho was on a Friday night. And luckily, my clients were at their rehearsal dinner, safe and sound, inside of a restaurant. But when they came home, they had two tents set up in their backyard for the wedding the next day for 200 people. One was a cloth tent that was primarily held up with poles and guy lines. And the other tent was a frame tent, which is a much sturdier tent. Either way, the pole tent was ripped in half and crumpled on the ground. Oof. This was like a, can't remember, I think it's a 30 foot diameter tent. It was a big tent. Might have been 60. Now I can't remember. 8 years ago. And that was brutal. I'm grateful that my friend Mary Kate McKenna, who is from the Midwest, saw the forecast of the derecho around like 4 o'clock that afternoon and posted it on Facebook. And I saw it and I was like, huh, this sounds like not a great thing for the two tents I have set up in Fairfax right now. So got on the horn with the tent company and we just kind of sat there and waited to see what happened. And sure enough, there was a lot of damage and destruction and the tent company had to pack a new truck at like 4 o'clock in the morning and come up from Charlottesville and wow, put in a whole new tent and new lighting. And it was quite the production. I had crippling anxiety that day.
Oh, I'm sure that was fun where you're sitting there going, looks like a lot of wind's coming. All right, well, I'll talk to you later. Like, what do you do? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Janice, I kept you far too long already. Again, it's it's bellwetherevents.com. Janice Carnevale. Don't say Carnevale, right? It's Carnevale, like Carnevale, like Lily of the Valley. That's how I'm going to remember. Yep. Janice, you're the best. Thank you so much. You're interesting as hell.
Thanks, Danny. I appreciate it.
Thank you again to my guest, Janice Carnevale of Bellwether Events. She is so cool. I'm a big fan of hers. She had some great answers too. One of the things you don't think about, right, as a kind of a, you know, additional damage of what's going on with this pandemic. And of course, listen, it's not as serious as people getting sick. It's not as serious as any loss of life or otherwise. But there are a lot of industries that are either just kind of shuttered or sheltered or never coming back or may never be the same. And there are a lot of small businesses that are really, really affected by what's going on at the moment. So I thought it was important maybe to highlight that element. And Janice gave a great answer, of course, right out of the gate about, you know, what's happened this year. People are, you know, either doing tiny events. I know I've got a good friend actually who just did that. Was supposed to get married in a great big celebration, and they just decided, you know what, we're going to take pictures of us on the Lincoln, on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial, and we'll post them on Instagram, and we'll do a formal ceremony maybe a year or two or something down the line. But we just wanted to be married, and you know, and that's great for them. You don't begrudge them that. Obviously, we're all just trying to make do during this thing. But, you know, you feel for folks like Janice and everybody kind of surrounding this wedding industry, right? That's people's livelihoods that are on the line. So I loved her answer about that. And one of my favorite parts of this is in thinking about it. And again, if you listen to the show before, you know how my mind works and how curious I am and about some of the hidden interactions or kind of goings on behind the scenes for an industry that we kind of don't think of normally, right? So that delicate balance that Janice and I were talking about, where she has to gently steer a client. And she was, you know, she demurred and was very kind about her, all of her clients, obviously saying, no, they're very down to earth, but sometimes they get a little sticker shock. Sometimes they get surprised at how much stuff kind of costs. And they, you know, you don't really know because you're not in that industry. You're not a professional at getting married. You're doing this once for a lot of us, some people twice, three times, God bless you, find happiness. But you know what I mean? You're not a professional wedder. Wedding planners are. They do a lot of these. The florist and the caterers, they do this professionally. You don't professionally get married. So a lot of times there is sticker shock. Again, I remember being stunned at how much it cost per person for food at our wedding. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't get over it. Again, my wife and I got one of our several, I would say, passionate discussions surrounding our wedding when I just couldn't believe the caterer's price. Right. And I said, do you understand that I could just go and have one of my groomsmen, one of my ushers, I got a bunch, just go down the street to name that barbecue joint, get $500 a barbecue, and everyone would be so much happier probably than that. And it was explained to me time after time after time after time that you just can't do it that way. And the cost isn't just the food, but it's the service and the cleanup and everything that kind of goes into it. So when you're charging $150, $160 ahead, it's not that they're eating $160 worth of food, so to speak, but that sticker shock and being able to kind of, again, massage that and make it more palatable and find a way to get what the client actually still ends up wanting and that they're happy with their very special day. I thought that was a great answer. I loved her answer also about the threshold that it would take to finally say, you know what, let me recommend somebody else for you, right? Because that's so hard. That is so hard in a business where you have to make people happy, no matter how crazy their demands are sometimes. The ability to do that, I think, is it takes a high level of gymnastics, I would say, to make sure that that person it doesn't walk away, you know, bitter or angry about you or disappointed and still feels like they had a good experience with you. So, you know, maybe that doesn't turn away any kind of future business from someone that might be more reasonable. I loved your story also about the derecho. What do you do? What do you do? How helpless do you feel in those kinds of moments, right? You're just sort of sitting there going, well, what's the weather going to do? We have no idea. Let's just twiddle our thumbs and see. And what it takes, again, to pull off that special thing behind the scenes sometimes is just unreal, because the last thing the bride needs to know as she's getting her makeup done is, door opens. We're so sorry, but the tent blew away and it's torn into shreds and they're trying to deliver another one from Charlottesville and there's only a handful of minutes to see if they can make it before wedding time. Good luck, though. We'll take care of it. I mean, can you imagine? No way, right? You got to find a way to get it done. And that's kind of the nature of it, right? The you know, I remember our wedding planner, again, I keep harkening back to my wedding, simply because, again, my anniversary is this week. But, you know, she's always carrying a safety pin just in case, right? Or a bobby pin or something else to fix your lapel or a collar stay for groomsmen. All that kind of stuff, Johnny on the spot. And that's really what a wedding planner is. Yes, it's the big, grand sweeping details of your day. It's the small bits of intimacy of your day and the timing and the walkthroughs and everything else and how you want it to go. But it's also the fail-safe to make sure that everything goes off splendidly and that everybody that comes kind of gets to bask in the reason that you're there, which is to see the wedding and to celebrate that happy couple. But I really love Janice's answers, and she's a sweetheart for joining me. So that's going to do it for us on this episode of You Seem Interesting. Really appreciate you guys checking out this show. My guest next week will be SportsCenter, ESPN personality, and NFL guru at this point. I mean, she's on almost every studio show when it comes to the NFL. My friend Diana Rossini will join the show next week. So excited about that. So check us out. Remember to like, subscribe, rate, review, spread the word. You can follow us at @interest_pod on Twitter and You Seem Interesting on the old Instagrams. Wherever you can find us, please download us. Thank you guys so much. And thank you as well to my producer, Andrew Russell of Kiwanda Sound. That's KiwandaSound.com. Until next time, all of you seem interesting.